Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back, and it is now or never, and that debt is fraud, and just to kind of help people, you know, cool their jets, when I talked about the amendment of allowing other states to join into the union, and that the process of allowing states to divide, Ohio, Indiana, there's lots of states that could easily become smaller states and still have the same, you know, I'll call it powers and capabilities of functioning. Bottom line, folks, the federal government shouldn't be operating a national health care system. It shouldn't be operating a welfare system. As a matter of fact, the institutions that should be running welfare should be your churches, your communities, not our government. That right there is a socialist government. And there's no reason why we can't create a limited and defined government and still be able to do, you know, the best things for ourselves. I mean, America became great without government being involved in healthcare, without government being involved in education, on and on and on. There are better ways of doing this. So if you want to discuss the merits of how we can do these things in better ways, that's great. That's what we need to do. But joining, or I should say expanding this hybrid constitutional republic to all nations is necessary. You want to end world wars? You want to end war, period? I mean, when's the last time, other than the Civil War over slavery, which was forecasted in this convention? Tammy was actually on that episode where Mason basically predicted that the divine hand of providence, our creator, will punish this nation and these states because he can't do it in heaven. So he will cause a national calamity. And that's exactly what happened because we refused to give up slavery. Therefore, as we finally fixed that, then we allowed other evil and corruption to come in. So bottom line, you know, this is our own doing. But we would never have to go through a war between states ever again when states actually adjoin into the union. The only thing that they need to do, if a state no longer wants to be, they want to have a theocracy and say, yeah, this isn't working for us. After 30, 100 years, what have you, we want to leave. Because we want to, and actually, technically, the only way a state can leave the union is because the Constitution is being violated by the federal government and the union. This is why Kentucky and Virginia could have actually nullified and left the union in 1798. So if government is actually doing what it's supposed to do, and it's allowing the states to function, and it's just umpiring, making sure states aren't waging war on each other and that type of thing, then for the most part, there won't be a war. We could end all war, period. I mean, you'd think the libertarians would be all on board with this because they got that silly no physical harm or no, you know, anyway. That little clause that they have. that being said, welcome back, Tammy. Welcome back. And let's dive into the content because we kind of missed some of this last week. And so I'd kind of like to get through because most of what we're talking about, they're really talking about some of the parameters and details regarding admitting new states into the union. And so let's start off with Mr. Williamson. And again, folks, this is on Thursday, August 30th. And Mr. Williamson is the fourth person speaking on that day. So we're still kind of at the top of the day. Okay.
Mr. Williamson said that North Carolina was well disposed to give up her western lands, but attempts at compulsion was not the policy of the United States. He was for doing nothing in the Constitution in the present case and for leaving the whole matter in status quo.
Okay. Mr. Wilson of Pennsylvania, go ahead.
Mr. Wilson. Mr. Wilson was against the commitment. Unanimity was of great importance, but not to be purchased by the majorities yielding to the minority. He should have no objection to leaving the case of new states as heretofore he knew of. Heretofore, period. He knew of nothing that would give greater or juster alarm than the doctrine that a political society is to be torn asunder without its own consent. On Mr. Carroll's motion for the commitment.
Okay. New Hampshire, no. Massachusetts, no. Connecticut, no. New Jersey, yes. Pennsylvania, no. Delaware, yes. Maryland, yes. Virginia, no. North Carolina, no. South Carolina, no. And Georgia, no. So 8-3. Okay. So, and you can see New York and Rhode Island were the two states that weren't present at the time. Okay, so Mr. Sherman then pipes in.
Mr. Sherman moved to postpone the substitute for Article 17, agreed to yesterday in order to take up the following amendment, quote, the legislature shall have power to admit other states into the Union and new states be formed by the division of junction or junction of states now in the Union with the consent of the legislature of such states, end quote. The first part was meant for the case of Vermont to secure its admission.
Okay. All right, so they were kind of creating a dual class or dual policy, one that would address one specific and one that would address all of the others. Okay, so on the question, it passed in the negative. In other words, New Hampshire, yes. Massachusetts, yes. Connecticut, yes. But New Jersey, no. Pennsylvania, yes. And then Delaware, no. Maryland, no. Virginia, no. North Carolina, no. South Carolina, no. And Georgia, no. So that's 7-4. So it did not pass. So they rejected both Mr. Carroll's motion as well as Mr. Sherman. So Dr. Johnson then moved to insert these words. Go ahead.
Dr. Johnson moved to insert the words hereafter formed or after the words shall be in the substitute for Article 17, the more clearly to say Vermont as being already formed into a state from a dependence on the consent of New York to her admission. The motion was agreed to. Delaware and
Maryland. Maybe? Only Maryland and Delaware dissenting. Yeah.
Maryland only dissenting.
Yep. Okay, so Governor Morris then moved. Go ahead.
Moved to strike out the word limits in the substitute and insert the word jurisdiction. This also meant to guard the case of Vermont, the jurisdiction of New York, not extending over Vermont, which was in the exercise of sovereignty, though Vermont was within the asserted limits of New York.
Okay. So on this question, New Hampshire, yes. Massachusetts, yes. Connecticut, yes. New Jersey, no. Pennsylvania, yes. Delaware, yes. Maryland, yes. Virginia, yes. North Carolina, no. South Carolina, no. And Georgia, no. So we have 7-4. Again, it passed. This actually passed. Okay, so counties as a base of political state. I'm pointing this out as a highlight. If I don't know if you have it in your notes, but this is a little mark that I have in here. This is where we start finding counties as political, as a base politic of the state. Go ahead with Dr. Martin. Or Mr. Martin, I'm
Mr.
sorry.
Mr. Martin urged the unresponsibleness of forcing and guaranteeing the people of Virginia beyond the mountains, the western people of North Carolina and of Georgia, and the people of Maine to continue under the states now governing them without the consent of those states to their separation. Even if they should become the majority of counties, as in Virginia, may still hold fast the dominion over them. Again, the majority may place the seat of government entirely among themselves and for their own conveniency, and still keep the injured parts of the states in subjection under the guarantee of the general government against domestic violence. He wished Mr. Wilson had thought a little sooner of the value of political bodies. In okay. the beginning, when the rights of the small states were in question, they were phantoms ideal beings. Now, when the great states were to be affected, political societies were of a sacred nature. He repeated and enlarged on the unreasonableness of requiring the small states to guarantee the Western claims of the large ones.
Okay, so that was big. What he basically said was that this concept of a political body being the county was obviously something that was far more fundamental within this state, right? In other words, this is what he said. Even if they should become the majority, in other words, as North Carolina, Georgia, and Maine, and Virginia, these Western people, even if they should become the majority of counties, as in Virginia, may still hold fast the dominion over them. Again, the majority may place the seat of government entirely among them for their own conveniency, and still keep the injured parts of the states in subjection under the guarantee of the general government against domestic violence. So in other words, this concept of these counties within the state may not recognize this, you know, this idea of separating. And so they were trying to go down this path of basically saying, hey, we need to make sure that instead of states having territories, all territories were to literally become states, their own states, to help divide that, to help sever those wrong connections. Because if they didn't cut it and end it at this point in time, it would perpetuate as they continued to expand into their territories. So in other words, the United States literally had to become the steward of all territories that weren't states, that weren't actually parts of the states, because technically Kentucky and Tennessee were territories. The boundary of Kentucky and the boundary of North Carolina were fixed. The boundaries of New Hampshire, fixed. So as these boundaries of the states were fixed, and they started occupying and nurturing and developing an adjoining territory, the move that they were laying out here was that they would have to become states in the Union. They couldn't just become whammo, an extension of the state. Does that make sense? And actually, this is the other part I want to highlight. When he goes down a little bit further, he says, in the beginning, way back in the beginning, when the rights of the small states are talked about in the beginning of the convention, when the rights of the small states were in question, they were phantoms, ideal beings. Now, when the great states were to be affected, political societies were of a sacred nature. In other words, the counties, these smaller subjects, these smaller entities within a state, were all of a sudden to become sacred entities that had the sacred nature. But in the beginning of the convention, remember, the small states were just going to be basically marginalized because they didn't have enough population. So in other words, Mr. Martin is bringing up is, hey, there's a little level of hypocrisy. You know, there is a truth to every state being sovereign. And it's the same thing that these counties themselves have an essence and a right to be sovereign themselves and to have control over their own destiny. That these territories that are being made up and the counties within those territories should be recognized as, you know, sacred and respected to basically have control of its own destiny through its own sovereignty. So this one, now when the great states were being affected, the political societies were of a sacred nature. He's just pointing out how all of a sudden everybody's rhetoric and talk about marginalizing and, we don't want to coerce states into dividing. That's not the point here. The point here is these are political societies. and they're political societies that are territories. And as we look at these territories should have a right to actually become a state and be admitted as a single or separate state in the Union. Thank you very much for Kentucky, or I should say thank you very much for Virginia, New Hampshire, and North Carolina for doing what now will become the responsibility of the federal government, which is why we see the final language of Article 4, Section 3 stating that Congress shall have, I'm not even going to try to paraphrase, I'm going to read it specifically. So, you know what, I got to pull up the Constitution. I usually have that thing open right there, boom, reading it. All right, so as it opens up, Article 4, Section 3 states this: new states may be admitted by the Congress into this Union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state be formed by the jurisdiction of two or more states or parts of states without the consent of the state legislatures. So at this point in time, the territory of Virginia, it's a territory of Virginia. It's not within, well, I guess it's kind of within their jurisdiction. But the point is that they were trying to make sure that it became a state and not a part of Virginia to allow Virginia to get bigger and bigger. The bottom line is that would be actually, if you really think about it, because this goes back to this idea of admitting states into the Union and why we need to allow all states to subdivide and admit more states into the Union, because America needs to have more than 200 states. You know why? As we adjoin new states into the Union, if many of these new countries come into the Union, then all they need is, you know, to put enough pressure, political pressure within the Senate to start actually having, you know, their finger on the scale of changing our culture and so forth. The best way we can preserve the culture of liberty, the culture of individual sovereignty, individual liberty, and those things that make America what it is to ensure that these new states are allowed the time to both assimilate and, I will call it, mature and nurture them into, you know, profoundly understanding this different form of government. I mean, we have a society today living in America that does not even understand it. And I don't think I'm causing any ruffling anybody's feathers or causing anybody pain by saying our ignorance of the Constitution is our biggest problem. Letting a whole bunch of new states that come in, that really, it takes time to understand this. And it takes time to start actually working within this so that people go, okay, so we need to have this buffer of protecting. So this is why the United States, Alaska, California, Texas, and so forth, big states as well as medium states, need to start subdividing. And so Washington could easily become three states. Oregon, probably the same. California could easily become 10 states. Texas, the same thing. You know, Alaska is a problem because the population is, it's sparsely populated. But once it starts growing...
Wait, so why do we need 200? I don't know if I ever...
Well, so how many nations in the world could actually join into the United States? Almost 200.
200.
That's right. Almost 200, right. So now we understand why we have to have enough states to help ensure and help to protect our culture, our governing culture, and these premises, because they are bringing their own culture, right? As we look at the very beginning, sure, there was a respect for the culture of Massachusetts and the culture of Georgia, i.e. the labor and all of those types of things. So they made these compromises to kind of respect these cultures, as long as it was cultural, mm-hmm, but not government politic. So these other governments, as they come in with, or I should say, as we bring in other government, we want to ensure that they won't have the ability to amass a level of control to deviate away from this culture that makes America great, this concept of individual liberty and individual sovereignty. because all we need is to have a few states join in, or enough states to then join in with the blue states or these other states that want communism and democracy. Until we get rid of these folks, until we get absolutely rid of these problem states, Gavin Newsom, Bob Ferguson, all of these tyrants, until we get rid of them, there's a problem, because new states could start joining. There'd be a ways down the road, but unless we actually fix this, this would be a nightmare. And I believe God is punishing us for allowing this nation to get so far lost, and for failing to bring liberty to the world. If you want us to receive the blessings that we should be getting as a nation, then that would mean that we would be leading the world in coming unto liberty, coming into the freedom and the ability for people to receive religious instruction and to practice a form of religion that cannot be denied because the government doesn't allow Christianity. So to do that, they have to become a state in this union. Because at this point in time, that's not happening around the world. There are states that do allow Christianity. They are allowing, but there are plenty of other states that don't. And I would look at Crimea as one of those states, or states under the Chinese rule. Some of the states that are under the rule of Islam. These states that want to abandon Islam. Like technically Iran. Iran is a state that was basically conquered and coerced and subjugated to Islam. Technically, they're Zoroastrian faith. Why is it that they're Islam today? Because they were forced. Those who wouldn't convert were killed. So, hey, look who won out. Islam. By the rule of the sword. So, this is, I can't express how important this is to actually, put states on the path where a true openness, a free market of religion, a free market economy, a free market in every aspect possible is what the land of liberty should be guaranteeing to all of the people of the states of the union. So if you join the union, you should have a reasonable expectation to be able to enjoy those types of things, a free market of religion, instead of being threatened and being killed because you don't want to follow somebody's religion. So, anyway, hopefully that all makes sense. I think it does. So
I think it makes sense. I mean, if you've got a communist province or state that wants to become a part of the United States, then we have to teach them. I mean, they don't even know what freedom means, so they would have to get used to what that even meant first.
Right, and there's merit for allowing states to subdivide so that the cultures, because there were cultures. I mean, look at West Virginia was a different culture from Virginia itself. And now they've thrived. And they've kind of thrived in more of a political tolerance because they've had both Democratic and Republican senators that have represented them. And so in some cases, that may have been by design. In some cases, it may have been by external forces. And in the latter, I believe the latter days, has been external forces. But nevertheless, the point is that allowing states to subdivide would grow enough states in the union to where we have well over 100. If we have well over 100, then we can absorb some of these states that haven't fully understood. They want to enjoy, they want to be a part of, but they don't fully understand. So with that, I guess that's the perfect time for taking a pause, and we'll come back and start reading further, because everything we're reading about regarding August 30th, they're all talking about this concept of bringing new states into the Union. And they're really looking at the land and the territories within the states at this point in time, and how to fix this or how to move forward. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so back to this discussion of how to move forward with this hodgepodge of conditions, with the Northwest order, the Northwest Territory being under the cognitive power of the Congress, or technically the Continental Congress, but when the Constitution is ratified, it will then be a territory of the United States. In contrast, the territory of New Hampshire, the territory of Kentucky, and the territory that is Kentucky and Virginia, and the territory that is Tennessee of North Carolina, then those three states need to be addressed in the admission of new states into the Union. They wanted to make sure that the existing states had their sovereignty so that they couldn't be coerced, but they also wanted to make sure that they ended the ability of claiming territory outside the United States. So in other words, Virginia can't admit a state into the Union because it has a territory. Technically, all territory should be, and this is why the language in the Constitution was added to basically ensure that the territory itself would be under the regulations and rules of the United States. In other words, as soon as the Constitution gets ratified, this thing, these territories of Kentucky, Tennessee, and Vermont, these territories that are currently state territories, would then actually fall under Congress, because the Congress shall have the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States. So in other words, states won't have the authority to possess territory to colonize and expand itself. Now, I think that right there should make more sense in this effort of explaining what they were really fighting and stumbling over at this point in time. Because at this point in time, they don't have that language. And if Tammy was responding to me, she just didn't know she was still muted. But as we look at what they're talking about, the language is not currently in Article 4, Section 3, or the 17th Amendment article, where they're talking about admitting new states. So they have to get there to actually create this cognitive authority for the United States to manage and be the ones responsible for nurturing and developing all new territories that will become states in the Union. Hopefully that makes sense, like I said.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. So let's go ahead and read what Governor Morris has said regarding this matter.
Governor Morris, it was said yesterday by Mr. Governor Morris that if the large states were to be split to pieces without their consent, their representatives here would take their leave. If the small states are to be required to guarantee them in this manner, it will be found that the representatives of other states will with equal firmness take their leave of the Constitution on the table.
Yes. Okay. So, bottom line, the hypocrisy was called out. You know, that, hey, if it's sacred, if these are sacred, then it's sacred. We can't split these things up. But he pointed out that these are political societies. That I think what Mr. I think it was Williams and Mr. Martin was pointing out, that these being political societies, both at the state level, but even at the county level. Okay, so Mr. Martin then said, go ahead. You're probably...
Sorry, okay. David, uh-huh. Get to the unmute. Mr. Martin moved to postpone the substituted article in order to take up the following. The legislature of the United States shall have power to erect new states within as well as without the territory claimed by the several states or either of them, and admit the same into the Union, provided that nothing in this Constitution shall be construed to affect the claim of the United States to vacant land ceded to them by the late Treaty of Peace, which passed in the negative. New Jersey, Delaware, and...
And Maryland were the only ones who said yes.
Maryland.
Yes.
Were the only ayes.
Right, okay. All right, so when we look at the language of the Constitution, apparently that language that he offered wasn't adequate. What really actually was added, and this is what it states, the final state of this section, or I should, yeah, section 3, nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state. In other words, if a state claims the territory to be theirs, then they can go down that path of doing that. Now, this is why I said, and I think technically, the state legislature of Virginia and the state legislature of North Carolina, I think, got it right, because they actually allowed, because Vermont was going to become a state, New Hampshire wanted to make sure that happened. So that New York wouldn't basically consume them. But Tennessee and Kentucky was basically properly managed by those state legislatures instead of just expanding their state. Because the cultures going across were becoming radically different as we started looking at, you know, what ended up becoming Tennessee and what ended up becoming Kentucky. They became different than Virginia and so forth. So I see that they did the right thing. But the bottom line is they did add this one clause that left it to the states. But moving forward, all territories, because at this point that ended state territories. There was no claims, because again, At the end of the Revolutionary War, the boundaries of Kentucky and the boundaries of Virginia, North Carolina, and so forth, they were fixed. And so they were claiming these territories, these states were claiming the territories next to them as a part of that, not beyond that. So in other words, now the states could no longer expand itself by claiming more territory. It couldn't go out and buy, because the point was it was to be managed and regulated as new territories were to come into the Union as states, which is why Section 3 of Article 4 was created, to ensure that the federal government would have the responsibility, not the power, the responsibility of making sure that these territories were nurtured properly and met the criteria to becoming states, not met the political agenda criteria, what have you, of another state. So anyway, there we go. So hopefully that's making sense. Now we can go on to the question. To agree to Mr. Governor Morris's substituted article as amended in the words following, and I'll go ahead and read it. New states may be admitted by the legislature into the Union, but no new states shall be hereafter formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any of the present states without the consent of the legislature of such state as well as the general legislature. So in other words, if there was going to be a new state, the general legislature being Congress, they had to agree, and the state legislature, in other words, within the jurisdiction of the existing state. Now, New Hampshire said yes, Massachusetts yes, Connecticut yes, New Jersey no, Pennsylvania yes, Delaware no, Maryland no, Virginia yes, North Carolina yes, South Carolina yes, and Georgia yes, giving us an 8-3. So again, finally they agreed upon that language, and that's pretty close to what actually is in the Constitution. Mr. Dickinson.
I was going to say that's pretty close.
That is getting pretty close, right? See, what we're watching is how the nuances of the words really matter to them, and they wanted to make sure that the power was, or I should say, the enumeration was going to ensure one equal footing for new states, was to ensure that the federal government didn't have the power to coerce or manipulate states or anything like that, that they were to bring in sovereign states into the union with equal footing. This is why the language had not been added. We kind of saw the language that the apportionment and everything else was not under the control of the legislature. That was the original language a few weeks ago, that the state, or that Congress would be able to legislate to determine how they would be apportioned, to make it up, whether, you know, they wanted to have less or put burdens on them. No, that language is now missing. So let's go ahead and read what Mr. Dickinson, and I'll let you keep going through all the way down, because we've got a lot of people to add to this. So just go ahead and flow with this until we hit the next voting on a motion, okay?
Okay, Mr. Dickinson moved to add the following clause to the last. Quote, nor shall any state be formed by the junction of two or more states or parts thereof without the consent of the legislatures of such states as well as of the legislature of the United States, end quote, which was agreed to without a count of the votes.
In other words, no contest.
Mr. Carroll.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no contest. Mr. Carroll moved to add, quote, provided nevertheless that nothing in this Constitution shall be construed to affect the claim of the U.S. to vacate land ceded to them by the Treaty of Peace, end quote. This, he said, might be understood as relating to lands not claimed by any particular states, but he had in view also some of the claims of particular states.
Okay.
And Mr. Wilson was against the motion. There was nothing in the Constitution affecting one way or the other the claims of the United States, and it was best to insert nothing, leaving everything on that litigated subject in status quo.
Okay. Mr. Madison. What?
Mr. Madison considered the claim of the U.S. as in fact favored by the jurisdiction of the judicial power of the U.S. over controversies to which they would be parties. He thought it best on the whole to be silent on the subject. He did not view the provision of Mr. Carroll as dangerous, but to make it neutral and fair, it ought to go farther and declare that the claims of particular states also should not be affected.
Okay.
Then Mr. Sherman thought the provision harmless, especially with the addition suggested by Mr. Madison in favor of the claims of particular states. Mr. Baldwin did not wish any undue advantage to be given to Georgia. He thought the provision proper with the addition proposed. It should be remembered that if Georgia has gained much by the cession in the Treaty of Peace, she was in danger during the war of a... I don't know what that word means. What's that mean?
Ut posseditus? I don't know. It's probably a legal term. It's probably Latin.
All right, Mr. Rutledge thought it wrong to insert a provision where there was nothing which could restrain or on which it could operate. Mr. Carroll withdrew his motion and moved the following. Quote, nothing in this Constitution shall be construed to alter the claims of the United States or of the individual states to the Western Territory, but all such claims shall be examined into and decided upon by the Supreme Court of the United States, end quote.
Okay.
Mr. Governor Morris moved to postpone this in order to take up the following. quote, "The legislature shall have power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution contained shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims either of the U.S. or of any particular state," end quote. The postponement was agreed to without contest.
Okay.
Mr. Martin moved to amend the proposition of Mr. Governor Morris by adding, quote, "but all such claims may be examined into and decided upon by the Supreme Court of the United States," end quote. Mr. Governor Morris, "this is unnecessary as to all suits to which the United States are parties are already to be decided by the Supreme Court."
Right.
Yeah. Mr. Martin,
yep.
"It is proper in order to remove all doubts on this point."
Okay,
go
keep
ahead.
Going.
What are you going to say?
Yeah, no, keep going.
Okay. The question on Mr. Martin's amendatory motion, New Hampshire, no. Massachusetts, no. Connecticut, no. New Jersey, aye. Pennsylvania, no. Delaware, no. Maryland, aye. Virginia, no. States not farther called.
Because,
the negatives being sufficient.
Yeah,
because and the point given.
Right, they already had enough no's to kill it. Right, okay. So then,
right.
Moving forward, now we're kind of done because this is where they kind of close on addressing the language of the admission of new states in the body of the whole. It goes out to the body of style, probably the committee of the 11 or the 5, what have you. It goes out to other committees as the Constitution is taking more and more form, and so they actually start going through it as you start seeing under, you know, September 4th, you know, the Constitution, because I believe it's September 4th, where you start seeing the articles, Article 1, they still have Article 7, Article 10, so it still hasn't been melted down into the 7 articles by that point in time. So the 5th, they continue to go on providing minute changes here and there. Folks, going through every single one of these is absolutely worth your while. But what we're trying to do is we're just trying to focus on the state suffrage in the Senate, that was guaranteed for the state legislature. We're also focusing on states being admitted into the Union by Congress. The other states, the president, the only way a state comes into the Union, because this goes into the 14th Amendment, a post-Civil War, it goes into moving forward. The question is, because some people say that because Congress has been violating the Constitution, that they don't have the authority to admit states into the Union. Yeah, they still have that authority. But even when they admit states into the Union, they're violating it. It doesn't mean that the state being admitted is not admitted into the Union. It's some of the contingencies that the federal government has placed upon them are not legitimate. So when you look at it, the federal government does have the authority to admit states into the Union. They don't have the authority to create public lands. They don't have the authority to take away assets, to place burdens greater on that state than any of the other states. Everything the federal government does must be uniform for all of the states. And it has to be within their enumerated objects. So let's say they want to create public land. They want to actually say, hey, we need to hold, you know, a mass of your land so that we can sell it. Well, right now, that power doesn't exist in the Constitution. So even if the states go along with it, they should actually be standing up saying, you have no authority to do this. You can't do this. See, they used it as a Ponzi scheme to say, we're going to give you a stipend of what we sell this land for so that you can get, you know, highways within your state paid for. You can do these things from this money we give you. That's how they got them to go along with it, but it doesn't mean what they were doing was legitimate. Admitting states into the Union, legitimate. But when they came into telling states that they could no longer be separable, that they couldn't leave the union, like in Wyoming's constitution, they're inseparable from the union. That clause is moot. That clause is unconstitutional. The federal government had no authority to do that, to make them say that, nor to create public lands, nor to do many of the things that they were doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it seems to me that what you're saying is, for example, like in Wyoming, the government somehow made the state believe that they could deem lands as public land or federal lands. And then, so they stole our land from us and then told us, oh, we'll give you some of the money back because we're going to make money from this land. And somehow they went along with it.
Yes. Okay. So what happened was, as of Indiana, every state constitution that had clauses entered into it by the behest of the federal government, that the federal government didn't have the authority to say, you need to include this, you need to include this, you need to do this, you need to set aside certain land for education and schools. Because Wyoming had that too. Almost every state in the union after Indiana, after they started meddling to tell them you have to have education, the federal government doesn't have any control over whether a state educates itself or not. It's nice. It's a noble thing. But they don't have the power to basically dictate that. So my point is that every state constitution from Indiana on, because of the undue and unconstitutional coercion of the federal government involved in these issues and driving these changes and these controls over the states, all of that needs to be removed. All of that needs to be really cleaned up so that the states' constitutions literally give the states the power and the full control over all of their land. With Wyoming in the 1850s, Ulysses S. Grant declared Wyoming as the national park, or Yellowstone, to be a national park. So that when the state basically formed, they basically said, hey, you've got a national park out there. Show me in the Constitution where the states have given and granted to the federal government to become keepers of national parks, or keepers of the forest, or keepers of wetlands, or the keepers of environmental conditions. Sorry. All of this may be nice, it may be noble, but it is not delegated authority, so it is illegitimate. Yes, it's that simple. So you're right. Almost all of the land of Wyoming, which has been absconded by the federal government and then recently been acquired by, you know, other sources, whether that's been purchases of by foreigners or people out of state that aren't residents of the state, then most all of that land is suspect. And that the state legislature, most all states need to change their constitution to say, if you're going to own land, you have to reside. You have to be a resident of this state. No foreigner can possess any land that is of this state, and basically define a foreigner to being a person that is not a resident of the state, that you have, you know, you may be a U.S. citizen, but you're still a foreigner to the state. You're not entitled to vote in the state. You're not entitled to, you know, own land or operate a company. You have to reside in the state to do these things. That cleans a lot of problems up, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. Okay. That makes sense.
All right. So now we got 4 minutes left. We can jump down because we're going to jump down to September 10th, all the way down to page 433. So we're going from August 30th or whatever to September 10th. And this is where Mr. Hamilton is back. And this the highlighting should be in blue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this is where they talk about the Constitutional Convention, the CONCON. And so, just so you understand, folks, the ability to have a convention falls under the premise of fixing the Constitution. I want to be clear about this. The only reason why we would create an amendment or have a constitutional convention, because they both fall under the same category, is to fix a problem with the Constitution. Now, there could be literally a problem with the Constitution, i.e., in Article 1, Section 4, there is the ability for somebody to run away from one state under bondage. And then if the owner of that person, i.e. returning slaves, if the owner of that person comes along and says, you must deliver that person to me, then that language needs to be expunged if it is no longer relevant and or of the law. And I say this because I'm going to get into this whole problem that was pushed forward from, because we probably won't get a chance to read this, but you're going to want to be, you probably want to be a part of this, or at least, because I think the next, our next recording session will be just Sean first, and then you come to the next one, Sean and me and you. The point is that when you have a problem with the Constitution, there's a method of fixing it, like that language of returning slaves. When you look at Article 1, Section, or Article 4, Section 2, or I think it's in Section 2, of returning slaves, when somebody reads that, they would say, well, that's part of the Constitution. Now, there may be some italicized letters or something. This was amended by the 15th Amendment. Well, actually, it wasn't. The language wasn't removed. So, in other words, when an amendment occurs, language should be removed if it calls for the removing of the language. What ended up happening between Madison and Sherman, Sherman said that you don't touch the original language. You leave it there, and then you force people to read the amendments. This causes problems because when people read the jurisdiction of the federal courts of Article 3, it clearly states what the jurisdiction is. If you're not aware that the 11th Amendment changed that jurisdiction specifically so that they don't have jurisdiction over certain things there, and then you don't read that, you're going to buy into this idea that they have this jurisdiction. And they don't.
Yeah.
Okay. It's the same thing with the Electoral College and the 12th Amendment. It's the same thing with all of these other amendments. If you're not reading the entire Constitution, this is why things need to be changed so that the original language actually identifies or inserts the language of the 12th Amendment of the Electoral College into Article 2 instead of it sitting out there just as a part of the 12th Amendment. Because when people read Article 1, 2, 3, and 4, and so forth, it should be sufficiently changed so that people read the real actual structure of what is the legitimate powers of government, or what are their roles, what are their responsibilities, instead of reading the antiquated, unchanged parts and forcing them to read the amendment. If that makes sense, hopefully it does. But when we get back, we're going to get into the con-con. And the whole point of what amendments are for, they're to fix problems with the Constitution. So I'm Jerry Mobley, we're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.